If you dig the twisted, admire the outlandish, and are enamored by the unusual, you're in the right place. True crime, the supernatural, the unexplained, now you're speaking our language. If you agree, join us as we dive into the darker side. You know, because it's more fun over here. Welcome to Total Conundrum.
Warning, some listeners may find the following content disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Picture this, a fitness instructor full of energy, devoted to her community. It's before dawn in small town Texas. She's setting up for a workout class inside of a church while most of us are still drooling on our pillows.
I mean, I can barely roll out of bed for a donut, let alone do lunges at 5 a.m. in a thunderstorm. This woman is committed.
Man, I respect Missy's 5 a.m. hustle, but listen, the only thing I'm rolling out of bed for at that hour is a donut the size of my head.
Oh, please. You'd roll out of bed for a donut at any hour. You'd sleep with one on your nightstand if you could.
Hey, don't judge me. That's called meal prepping.
Meal prepping? More like a snacksident waiting to happen.
I'll give you that one. Well, unfortunately, on April 18th, 2016, that dedication turned into tragedy. Surveillance footage captured a mysterious figure dressed head to toe in SWAT gear, like something out of a movie. But this wasn't a heist. It wasn't a prank. It was a brutal murder that shocked the entire community and still has police scratching their heads almost a decade later.
You've probably heard about it. Missy Beavers, the mom of three, fitness instructor, and all-around powerhouse. She was doing what she loved most, helping people get healthy and feeling strong, and then gone just like that.
Today, we're diving deep into Missy's life. The morning of the murder, the chilling surveillance footage, and the trail of suspects and theories that have twisted and turned for years without resolution.
We'll break down the evidence, explore the possible motives, and share all the details some of you might not have heard before. And trust me, there are a lot of rabbit holes in this one.
So buckle up, Conundrum Crew. Get your pre-workout drinks ready and just maybe skip that 4 a.m. class.
This is the story of Missy Beavers, and it's as puzzling and haunting as it gets. Before we get into all the weirdness and theories, let's talk about Missy herself, because she wasn't just a headline. She was a real person with a big, bright life.
Missy was born Terry Leanne Missy Beavers on August 9th, 1970 in Graham, Texas. And honestly, from everything we've read, she was the kind of person who could light up an entire gym full of people at 5 a.m., which, let's be honest, is basically a superpower.
A superpower? If she could get you to light up at 5 a.m., she'd qualify for the Avengers.
Hey, I can be cheerful at 5 a.m. If we're talking about 5 a.m. in a different time zone, after a full night's sleep and maybe there's a waffle involved.
So in other words, never?
Yeah, exactly.
Missy was known for being full of energy, always smiling, and she had this unstoppable drive. You know, those people who can make you do burpees and somehow you're still smiling. That was Missy.
She grew up loving fitness and movement. Later, she turned that passion into a career as a Camp Gladiator instructor. And for anyone who doesn't know, Camp Gladiator is like a boot camp on steroids. Group workouts, ton of high energy group training, all that. You can do it hype.
She was married to Brandon Beavers, and together they had three daughters, Hannah, who was 15, Allie, who was 13, and Sarah, who was just 9 at the time. Family was huge for her. By all accounts, she was super devoted to her girls and balanced that busy home life with her equally busy career.
And she wasn't just leading workouts. She was building a community. Her classes weren't just about burning calories. They were about connection. People described her charismatic, warm, and uplifting. The kind of instructor who remembered your dog's name, your favorite post-workout snack, and probably your biggest life goals.
Honestly, she sounds like the friend who texts you at 6 a.m. to say, "Get up, you're stronger than you think," and somehow you don't block them.
Oh, I'd block them. No hesitation. You text me before sunrise with motivational quotes, you're getting ghosted faster than my gym membership renewal email.
Please. You'd unblock them 5 minutes later if they mentioned bringing you donuts or brownies.
Okay, first of all, rude. Second of all, you're absolutely correct. Donuts and brownies are my love language.
See, I know you too well.
All right, back to the story. Missy's presence in Midlothian, Texas kept growing. She was the person that got people out of bed, literally and figuratively. She made people feel supported, seen, and capable.
So when she was murdered, it didn't just shake her family, it rocked the entire community. She was that bright spark for so many.
And that's what makes this case so hard. You have this vibrant, driven woman doing everything right. And then one morning, she walks into a church of all places to teach a workout class and never comes out.
It's the kind of story that stays with you and makes you want to dig deeper to understand why and who could have possibly done this.
And that's exactly what we're going for today. Because Tracy made me. She's always picking the creepiest, most twisted cases to ruin my sleep schedule.
Hey, someone's got to keep you on your toes.
I guess. All right, Conundrum Crew, buckle up. Let's walk through what happened on this stormy morning in April of 2016. Because the timeline here, it's as eerie as it gets.
Yes, it is. So the night before, April 17th into the 18th, there were thunderstorms rolling through Midlothian, Texas, the kind that makes you want to stay under the covers and cancel all your plans.
But Missy, she was unstoppable. She even posted on Facebook that night, encouraging her Camp Gladiator crew to still come to the class. Rain or shine, they were going to crush that workout.
Talk about dedication. Meanwhile, I'm over here canceling brunch if there's a light drizzle.
Oh, same. I can't risk it. I'd totally melt in the rain. I'm just that sweet.
Oh, you know what? Fair point. You are pretty sweet.
Oh, I'm glad you agree. Well, around 4:16 a.m., Missy arrived at Creekside Church of Christ to set up. This was her usual spot for early morning classes. Familiar, comfortable, a safe place to help people get moving before the sun even thought about coming up.
But here's where the story gets chilling. Around 3:50 a.m., almost half an hour before Missy arrived, surveillance footage captured someone entering the church, and this wasn't your average burglar.
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey, Conundrum Crew. Have you ever listened to an episode and thought, wow, I wish I could wear this level of chaos?
Well, now you can. That's right. Total Conundrum officially has merch.
Hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, stickers, everything you need to rep your favorite mystery-loving, banter-filled podcast in style.
And the best part? Our signature cute pink brain is front and center, scratching its head just like the rest of us, trying to figure out life's weirdest mysteries.
Honestly, it's the perfect representation of our show. Smart, a little confused, and totally adorable.
Just like me! Yeah!
Sure, Jeremy. Let's go with that.
Anyways, if you want to grab your official Total Conundrum merch, head to bonfire.com/store/total-conundrum and get yourself something spooky, stylish, and absolutely conundrum worthy.
Because nothing solves a mystery quite like retail therapy.
Available now while supplies last.
And back to the show.
Nope, this person was head-to-toe in SWAT-style tactical gear. Helmet, heavy vest, marked police, gloves. It looks straight out of a crime thriller, except this was real.
The footage is downright unsettling. The figure moves calmly through the hallways, opening doors, peeking into rooms, smashing random windows, and they're carrying what looks like a hammer or a similar tool.
Yeah, there's something really casual about it. They're not running or acting frantic. They're methodical, almost like they had all the time in the world. Or like they were searching for something or someone.
By 5 a.m., some of Missy's class participants began arriving for boot camp. But instead of a cheerful instructor waiting with battle ropes and motivational quotes, They found her lifeless body.
That's honestly one of my worst fears, showing up somewhere expecting one thing and instead walking into something so tragic. I can't even imagine what those people went through.
Yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking and horrifying.
Exactly. To find somebody like that, it's just not shocking. It's traumatic. It's something that would stay with you for the rest of your life.
And it really makes you think about how precious and fragile life is. You just never expect something like that to happen in a place that's supposed to be safe.
Absolutely. It's a moment that changed so many lives, not just her family's. Missy had multiple puncture wounds on her head and chest. She was attacked brutally. No chance to fight back. No signs of a struggle. It was quick and shockingly violent.
I can't get over the image of her standing there, maybe setting up mats and equipment, and then suddenly facing this figure dressed as law enforcement.
Right? Someone she might have instinctively trusted for a split second. And then in that moment, everything changed.
And that's what makes this so much more chilling. The fact that criminals use police gear to manipulate that basic human instinct to trust authority, it's such a violation on every level.
Exactly. We're taught to feel safe when we see a uniform or those flashing lights. But look at what happened recently in Minnesota. That horrifying shooting where Vance Bolter used SWAT-style gear, a flashing light on his car, and even claimed to be police and shot and killed former Minnesota Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband.
Yeah, and he also shot and critically wounded John Hoffman and his wife. It's terrifying. He literally tricked people into opening the door by posing as law enforcement. You hear stories like that and you realize just how vulnerable we all are when someone abuses that trust.
And Missy likely didn't have time to process or question it. One second, you think help or safety is walking in. The next, your life is over. It's gut-wrenching.
It really shows how dangerous it is when criminals weaponize that trust. And it makes what happened to Missy even more heartbreaking. It's like a horror movie, but with real consequences and real grief.
So that's the grim timeline of April 18th. The last morning Missy Beavers would ever walk into that church, doing what she loved most. And the morning she tragically lost her life.
Next, we're going to break down that surveillance footage even more. Look at all of the small weird details and see how they've driven investigators and armchair detectives absolutely mad. All right, let's dig into what was found at the scene. And fair warning, this part gets pretty graphic.
As the cases you pick always do. So when the police arrive at Creekside Church of Christ, one of the first things they notice, there were no signs of forced entry on any exterior doors.
Which is weird, right? The building wasn't ransacked from the outside. Whoever this was either had a way in, like a key, or knowledge of somehow to access it, or they managed to enter without leaving obvious damage.
And inside, nothing was stolen. There was equipment, sound systems, electronics, all untouched. It wasn't like someone broke in for a quick cash or resale gear.
Police quickly started to think the whole break-in vibe was staged. You know, the broken interior glass, doors being open, almost like someone wanted it to look random, but it wasn't.
Exactly. And then there's the attack itself. Missy had severe blunt force trauma, mainly to her head and chest. Investigators believe the weapon was likely a hammer or something similar, which fit with what the suspect was seen carrying in the surveillance footage.
The autopsy later confirmed multiple puncture-type wounds, and these wounds line up with the tool marks, suggesting a sharp or pointed object on top of the blunt trauma. It was brutal. Close contact attack.
It wasn't quick. It wasn't clean. This was personal and vicious. The type of violence that makes investigators immediately think, this person knew her. This wasn't random.
And then add in the bizarre detail that the suspect was in full tactical gear. It's one of those cases where every single detail feels off, like a jigsaw puzzle where all the pieces are from different boxes.
Right? And that combo of staging, the weapon choice, and the tactical outfit, It left investigators with more questions than answers.
But the big question, who could possibly have planned something this elaborate and why?
Coming up next, we'll discuss the surveillance footage in detail, every hallway stroll, every weird movement, and see how it turned into one of the most haunting pieces of evidence in modern true crime. Okay, so let's talk about what's probably the most chilling piece of this entire case, the surveillance footage.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's both fascinating and straight up nightmare fuel. You see this figure, fully decked out in the tactical SWAT-style gear, strolling around inside the church like they were on a casual Sunday tour.
They're moving slowly, opening doors, checking rooms, and at one point even breaking some glass, for no clear reason, just casually smashing things.
And the most haunting part? The way they walk. This odd, almost waddling gait. Some experts thought maybe it was a leg or foot injury that the person might have, or a distinct limp. Others suggested it could have been a deliberate disguise, like they were intentionally changing their walk to throw people off.
Yeah, the fake gait theory really sticks with me. Like somebody putting on an act so investigators couldn't match it to anyone they knew. Super unsettling.
Okay, but can we talk about that walk for a second? I mean, what was that? They looked like a toddler wearing a full diaper.
Right? It was like a cross between a zombie shuffling and someone desperately looking for the bathroom at a music festival.
Exactly. I mean, you're gonna plan this elaborate crime with the tactical gear and everything. Maybe rehearse your walk first. Just a thought.
For real? You'd think with all the prep, they could have at least practiced a power strut.
Honestly, if I saw someone moving like that, I wouldn't think dangerous intruder. I'd think, oh no, that poor person needs a chiropractor immediately.
Or an exorcism. Either way, that gait is unforgettable and not in a good way.
And it wasn't just the way they moved, it was how they moved. Calm, no rush, no panic. Like they knew exactly where they were and exactly what they were doing. Police even mentioned that it looked like the person was familiar with the building's layout.
Which, to me, suggests planning. This wasn't somebody wandering around lost. This was methodical. They had a purpose, and that's terrifying.
On top of that, there was footage from a nearby business that showed a 2010 to 2012 Nissan Altima driving slowly around the church parking lot around 2 a.m., a couple of hours before the murder.
That car has never been linked to anyone. No driver identity, no clear connection. It's like a ghost car that just melted away into the night.
And when it comes to hard forensic evidence, nothing, nada, no fingerprints, no DNA, no blood drops left behind that could lead to a suspect.
Whoever did this either knew exactly how to avoid leaving traces, or they just got extremely lucky. But with that kind of gear and preparation, I lean towards they knew exactly what they were doing.
Same. Between the odd gait, the SWAT getup, and the lack of DNA, and that mystery Altima, this whole thing feels like something out of a heist movie. But instead of a vault, they targeted a completely unsuspecting fitness instructor.
So by this point, investigators had a violent crime scene, a chilling video of a fully armored suspect, and zero physical evidence to pin it on anyone. And the longer it went unsolved, the more theories started to swirl.
But before we start talking about the suspects and the wild motives, let's do what we do best. Break this evidence down piece by piece. Because the devil's in the details, and we're definitely detail devils. All right, so before we dive into suspects, let's pick apart the evidence a bit.
Oh yeah, the surveillance footage alone, it's creepy, weird, and so frustratingly vague at the same time.
Let's start with that odd gait. Some say it looks like they're limping, and or maybe they have a foot injury. Others think it was an intentional act to throw off investigators. What's your thoughts?
I think it was fake. If you're planning something that elaborate, you're probably smart enough to think, hey, I better walk funny so no one recognizes me later. like an evil penguin shuffle.
An evil penguin shuffle. I love that. But I guess I'm kind of leaning towards a real injury or a physical trait. You just can't fake a weird walk perfectly for that long without slipping up. And the footage shows them moving constantly that way.
Okay, good point. But then there's the calm demeanor. No sprinting, no panicking, just strolling around like they're looking for the free dessert at the church potluck.
That's what really gets me. Whoever this was knew exactly where to go and had zero urgency. It felt like they were waiting and watching, almost as if they knew she was coming and had time to prepare.
Right? That brings us to the familiarity with the building. They checked doors like they'd done it before. Not random, not lost, just methodical.
Which adds to the theory that this wasn't some last-minute oops, I wandered into the church situation. This was someone who planned every detail.
And then we got this Nissan Altima, spotted by a nearby business camera around 2 a.m. Who was driving it? Why were they there, circling the parking lot?
Exactly. That car is like the ultimate red herring. It's just lurking in the background of this case like a ghost car that nobody can identify.
And finally, the ultimate frustration. No DNA or fingerprints. This person either left nothing because they were a pro or got unbelievably lucky, or they were intentionally fully suited up to avoid leaving any trace.
Honestly, if I ever plan a crime, which I wouldn't, I would probably forget to wear gloves and end up leaving a whole trail of Taco Bell receipts. This person was on another level.
Exactly. So you've got a creepy gate, zero panic, full building knowledge, a mysterious car, and no forensic trail. It's like they appeared from a dimension where evidence doesn't exist.
So what do you think, Conundrum Crew? Was this a seasoned pro? A stalker who got extra careful? Or are we all just starring in the worst episode of Scooby-Doo ever?
Drop us your thoughts, because we're definitely still scratching our heads over this one.
Coming up next, we finally tackle the suspects, the actual names investigators looked at in this tangled mess. So after the news of Missy's murder broke, the entire community basically went into shock. Midlothian isn't some big bustling city. It's a close-knit town where people wave at each other and know each other's kids.
Yeah, this kind of violence was like a meteor hitting Main Street. And with all those surveillance images splashed all over the TV and social media, people were glued to every update.
The first person on everyone's mind, Brandon Beavers, Missy's husband. You know, in so many cases, investigators start with the spouse. It's like true crime rule number one.
Totally. But Brandon was on a fishing trip in Mississippi at the time. And not just a trust me bro alibi. He had receipts, travel records, and friends to back it up. Pretty ironclad.
Next up was Randy Beavers, Missy's father-in-law. He ended up under scrutiny because, wait for it, a bloody shirt of his turned up at a dry cleaner shortly after the murder.
Yeah, talk about suspicious timing. But he claimed it was dog blood from a cleanup accident at home. After testing, police confirmed it wasn't human, so he was cleared too.
But it definitely threw gasoline on the rumor fire in town. People were already suspicious, and that just made things spicier for the local gossip.
And then there were those creepy LinkedIn messages Missy had been getting before she died. Some of them were described as flirtatious or suggestive, and definitely unwanted. And get this. Missy actually showed one of those messages to a close friend just 3 days before her death. That friend thought it was creepy and strange, enough to tell investigators afterward.
Which raises the possibility that she had a stalker, someone who was watching her and obsessing over her, and possibly knew her schedule all too well. The sender of those messages was never publicly identified, but investigators did track down a person of interest who had been chatting with her online for months.
Yeah, and those chats apparently got pretty flirty, which just adds another big weird layer to this already tangled case. However, no evidence connected him to the actual murder, and he was not arrested.
Investigators dug deep. They interviewed friends, family, fitness clients, other instructors. Basically anyone who might have had beef with Missy or any other weird interactions with her. But despite all that effort, they didn't find that smoking gun. No confessions, no physical evidence to tie anyone to the crime scene, just a growing list of questions and a community full of fear.
Imagine trying to go back to church services there after that, or even attend another early morning boot camp. It shook people to their core.
And with no solid suspects, everyone in town started forming their own theories. You know, that classic neighbor you thought was weird suddenly seemed really weird kind of thing.
Exactly. And honestly, even to this day, some folks are still side-eyeing people in their own neighborhoods.
So, investigators had to pivot to bigger theories. Was this someone with a personal vendetta? Was it jealousy? A professional hit? A tragic case of obsession turned deadly? Or just a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Which brings us to the next big piece of the twisted puzzle, the motives and theories that have haunted this case for years.
Don't go anywhere, Conundrum Crew, because things are about to get even murkier.
All right, so by now, investigators were pretty much working with a blank canvas when it came to suspects. That's when they started zeroing in on possible motives, because, let's be honest, someone went to a lot of trouble to do this. There had to be a reason.
First up, the idea of marital strain. Reports came out that Missy and Brandon's marriage wasn't exactly storybook perfect at the time. Some close to them mentioned tensions at home and even some financial stress.
There were also whispers about possible affairs. Brandon himself confirmed there was an affair that came to light in 2014, which the couple had worked through. However, no evidence linked that affair to Missy's murder.
It's like the classic true crime math. Marital problems plus stress and an extramarital affair equals suspicion. But even with all of that, there was never a direct connection to Missy's murder, and Brandon's alibi stayed rock solid.
Exactly. Then there's the jealousy and personal grudge theory. Missy was big in the local fitness scene. And if you've ever been in the world of personal training, you know it can get surprisingly cutthroat.
Oh yeah. Between rival instructors, business competition, and plain old personal drama, some folks thought maybe someone in her circle got jealous or felt threatened by her growing popularity.
Or maybe it was something more personal, like a falling out with somebody she knew, or a friendship gone sour that turned dangerous.
Then we get to one of the most unsettling possibilities, the stalker theory.
Some believe she was being watched, followed, and that this was a carefully planned targeted attack. Not a burglary gone wrong, but a mission.
It would explain why nothing was taken and why the attacker seemed so comfortable inside the building. Like they knew she'd be alone, knew her schedule, and knew exactly how to ambush her.
And finally, the big one, professional hit or impersonation. The tactical SWAT gear wasn't your average Amazon Halloween costume. It looked legit. Too legit to quit.
Right? Some think it was someone with access to real gear, like military, law enforcement, or someone in security. The idea is they might have used the uniform to lower her guard or to confuse any potential witnesses.
The impersonation angle is especially creepy. The suspect could have been trying to appear as an authority figure, making it even harder for Missy to suspect danger in the split second before the attack.
Plus, that kind of gear takes money and planning to get, not exactly an impulse buy on a Saturday night.
So when you line all these theories up, marital strain, jealousy, stalking, and or a professional style hit, they all make you wonder, who wanted Missy gone badly enough to plan something this elaborate?
And yet, none of these theories have ever led to an arrest. No solid evidence, no confessions, nothing concrete.
It's like each theory is its own dark hallway, and no matter which one you walk down, you hit a dead-end road.
Coming up next, we're going to talk suspects, because these theories all point somewhere. But to who? Stick around.
All right, I'll go first. I'm all in on the stalker theory. Those creepy LinkedIn messages, that's not normal flirty. That's full on, I've been hiding in your bushes.
Wait, did you just say what I think you said?
Yes, bushes. Whoever sent them had the nerve and the weirdness to escalate.
Oh, yeah. Creepy, yes. But enough to pull off a whole SWAT gear operation? That feels like a huge jump.
Exactly. That's what makes it so scary. A stalker might fantasize for years and then finally snap and go full tactical. Plus, they knew her schedule. They knew exactly when she'd be alone. It wasn't random.
I get it, but you're forgetting. That gear was serious. It looked like real tactical equipment, and it feels way more like a professional hit or impersonation to me. Someone with access, maybe even training.
But what if the whole point was to look professional, to throw people off? Like, you don't need to be SWAT certified to go buy gear online. Ever seen Halloween stores? They got everything these days.
Nah, I've never stepped foot into a Halloween store. Wink, oh, wink.
I know you haven't.
Sure. But the suspect was moving like they knew what they were doing. Not just in the gear, but in the building. Calm, no hesitation. That kind of confidence isn't easy to fake.
Maybe, but people can plan and rehearse. What about personal grudge theory? That fits with a stalker or even somebody from her fitness community who got jealous. You don't need to be a Navy SEAL to hold a hammer and hate someone.
True, but the impersonation angle still feels strongest to me. Like maybe they dressed a SWAT to make her drop her guard for that split second. Think about it. You see someone in police gear at 4 a.m., maybe you feel safer at first.
Until you realize they're holding a hammer and they aren't there to check the building codes.
Exactly. So where does this case stand today? Believe it or not, nearly a decade later, Missy Beaver's murder is still officially open and active as of 2025.
Yeah, Midlothian police have never closed the file. They say they're still following up on every single lead, no matter how small, which, honestly, has got to be exhausting and frustrating.
The community has worked hard to keep Missy's story alive. There has been community walks, candlelight vigils, and even billboards reminding people about the case, urging anyone with info to come forward.
And let's not forget that big carrot still dangling out there. The $150,000 reward for any information that leads to an arrest and conviction. You'd think that would shake something loose by now.
But even with that reward and the fact that this case has gone global thanks to true crime podcasts, news specials, YouTube deep dives, there hasn't been that one big breakthrough.
Tips still come in from time to time. Every so often, a new theory pops up. A new person of interest gets mentioned online, but so far, nothing has panned out.
And the police keep stressing they haven't given up. They believe someone out there knows something. Maybe they're scared. Maybe they think it's too small to matter. But that piece of information could finally bring justice for Missy.
It's one of those haunting cases where it feels like the answer is just out of reach. Like it's been hiding in plain sight all along.
And in the meantime, Missy's family and friends continue to wait. Her daughters are growing up without their mom. Her fitness community is forever changed, and her story has become this giant, unfinished chapter that still echoes through Midlothian.
Coming up next, we'll wrap up with some final reflections, the impact Missy had on her community, and of course, our own take on this deeply twisted mystery.
Stay with us, Conundrum Crew. We're not done yet.
So, when you put all these pieces together, it's almost unreal. A quiet Texas church, a dedicated fitness instructor starting her day like any other day, and then this cold, calculated figure in tactical gear stepping out of the shadows.
Yeah, it feels like a horror movie, except this was real. And the scariest part? Almost a decade later, we're all still asking the same question. Who was behind the mask?
Missy Beavers wasn't just a headline. She was a mom, a wife, a friend, and a fierce motivator. Her love for fitness wasn't just about workouts. It was about lifting people up, helping them feel strong inside and out.
She built a community. Her students saw her as more than an instructor. She was that person who believed in you even when you didn't believe in yourself. That's the legacy she left behind.
And now her family, her friends, her daughters, they're all left without answers. A huge, painful void that no amount of theories or online speculation can fill.
We want to know what you think, Conundrum Crew. Who do you think was behind the mask? Was it someone close to her? A stalker? A complete stranger? Why has this case been so impossible to solve?
We'd love to hear your thoughts. Share them on our socials or email us. You know, we read every single theory and love going down those rabbit holes with you.
And if by some miracle you know something, even the tiniest detail, please reach out to authorities. Missy's family deserves peace, and this community deserves closure. If anyone has information about Missy Beaver's case, they're asked to contact Middle Lothian Police Department non-emergency phone line 972-755-3333. You can also call 911 if it's urgent or critical. Ellis County Crime Stoppers phone tip line is 972-937-7297. Anonymous online tips you can submit at Ellis County Crime Stoppers website.
Missy Beaver's story reminds us that life can change in an instant, and that sometimes the monsters aren't the ones hiding under the bed. They're the ones hiding in plain sight.
Stay safe, stay curious, and always watch out for each other.
And remember, keep questioning, keep digging, and keep those conundrums coming.
All right, Conundrum Crew, we know this was a heavy one, but we've got plenty more mysteries, weird tales, and twisted true crime stories coming your way.
Yep, next week we're diving into the bizarre and bone-chilling legend of the Van Meter Visitor, Iowa's very own winged, glowing bat-like nightmare from 1903. Trust us, you won't want to miss this one.
Hold up. Wait a second. You always say I pick the horrifying cases, and now you bring us a giant, glowing bat monster?
Hey, first of all, it's technically a visitor, which sounds way more polite than monster. Like, oh, hey, just popping by to borrow some sugar.
Oh, yeah. Super polite. A giant bat creature with a glowing forehead horn and a stench that could knock out an entire barn. I bet it even says please before it scares the pants off an entire town.
Exactly. Midwest manners. It probably brought a hot dish to share before it started smashing windows and dive bombing rooftops.
You know what? You're right. Maybe it was just misunderstood. It showed up to the wrong potluck and realized there was no Jell-O salad, and it panicked.
I mean, honestly, I'd be pretty upset too. If I showed up somewhere and there was no Jell-O salad or donuts, oh, I'm out of here.
Oh my God, you and your donuts.
I do love donuts.
You do. Do you think the Van Meter Visitor would like donuts?
I think so.
Maybe. Maybe that's all it needed. Someone to toss it a maple long john.
They always make me really happy. Honestly, that might have solved everything. Don't mind me, folks. Just here for the pastries. Crisis averted. Whole legend avoided.
So, you admit it. You're just as capable of picking horrifying cases as I am. You cannot blame me anymore.
Okay, okay. But in my defense, I'm picking fun horrifying. You pick make Jeremy sleep with the lights on for a month horrifying. Like, I pick weird bat monster. You pick stories where I start double-checking our locks, closets, checking the alarm system at 3 a.m.
Oh, please. Hey, true crime is important. It's about telling people stories, giving victims a voice, and maybe even helping someone out there find answers. You always act like I'm dragging you into the darkness by your hoodie.
Because you are. I come in ready to talk about ghosts, cats, or cryptid raccoons, and you're like, let's discuss a guy who lived in a crawl space for 12 years. No, thank you.
Hey, someone has to keep our listeners awake at night, and not with just glowing bat creatures who want a snack.
Look, if a bat creature shows up at my window, I'll toss it a donut and hope for the best. If it's one of those true crime villains, I'm moving states.
So you're saying you'd rather face a 7-foot winged monster than a well-researched criminal mastermind?
100%. Monsters are straightforward. Your true crime picks are like, he seemed so normal until he wasn't. That's scarier than any cripple.
Fair enough.
See, I win.
But in the meantime, we want to hear from you. Drop your theories about Missy's case in our socials, DM us, or contact us on totalconundrum.com. We absolutely love reading your takes. The wilder, the better.
And don't forget to like, follow, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It might not solve any murders, but it definitely helps us keep the mics on and the mysteries coming.
And we would like to give a huge shout out to everyone keeping Missy's memory alive. Her family, her friends, and all the folks in Middle Lothian who refused to let her story fade away.
We'll keep watching the shadows and questioning everything so you don't have to lose any sleep alone.
Stay safe out there, Conundrum Crew, and keep on creeping on. We love you.
Bye. Thanks for hanging out with us here at Total Conundrum. Please make sure to check out our website and blog at totalconundrum.com for news, upcoming events, merch, bloopers, and additional hysteria. You never know what will pop up, so be sure to follow along. If you want to show your support for Total Conundrum and gain access to all of our bonus content, please visit our Patreon page. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The links are available in our show notes. If you have any questions, comments, recommendations, or stories to share, please email us at contact@totalconundrum.com. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate the love. Keep on creeping on, mother cluckers.